Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem.
Biz Talk Radio is proud to bring you Investor's Edge with Gary Kaltbaum. Straight talk about you and your money. You can reach Gary now at 877-747-EDGE. That's 877-747-3343. Here is your host, Gary Kaltbaum.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum. Today is Thursday, May 16, 2019, and we have a great show for you tonight. We want to thank you very much for being here. But first, a little housekeeping. As you know, this is a show about you and your money and all the fun points in between, the thinking, the psychology, the market action, understanding and anticipating how other people behave, and the list goes on and on and on, and the politics and the schmolitics and the Fed and earnings, and the list goes on and on. Just as a quick reminder, if you don't get this show in your city, you can go to GaryK.com and listen live or archive. If I go too fast or you want to pause it, rewind it, listen to some of the stocks or the points that we mentioned during the show, you can always do that at GaryK.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Also at GaryK.com, you can follow Gary on Twitter by just pressing the button. You can subscribe to get Gary's morning notes sent directly to your inbox. You can email Gary, ask him about his money management services and all the other articles that he posts throughout the day and the week. You can also subscribe to the Conviction Leaders Report, which is a great note that Gary puts out that I strongly recommend reading because I do it, and it's really insightful. He puts a weekend report out. He also has several intra-week updates depending on market action, and he does a great job of keeping your finger right on the pulse of the market and letting you know when things are moving, what to look at. He's got a great eye, as you guys know, following leadership and following leading stocks and really making sense of everything that's happening on Wall Street and the voice of logic and reason. Now, a few points for today's action, or a few for today's show, rather, is we'll summarize today's action. We'll talk about some of the movers of the day. We'll talk about the major indices, some of the headlines of the day, and more or less help keep putting the pieces of the puzzle together. You know, on yesterday's show, if you want to go back and listen to it, by all means, feel free. We basically broke down the action for you in an easy-to-use and easy-to-way, I guess, understanding of what's happening, what's been happening, and then how to put yesterday's topic. I mean, one of the big messages sent yesterday was how to really put yourself in the shoes of the negotiators as people negotiate. Yesterday was the trade war, China and U.S. Again, today dominated the headlines. Understand it from both points of views. And then put yourself in the market's position. What does it mean for both Main Street and Wall Street? Every economic data point, ladies and gentlemen, just I want to repeat this point because we got a lot of notes and questions off of the topics yesterday from the show. It's real simple. It's your job. It's impossible to predict the future. No one can do it. Your job is to manage risk, control, you know, what is the one variable we all can control? It's risk. It's when we enter, when we exit, and the most important component is how much we risk when we're wrong. And that's the component most people just ignore. They go, I'm going to get rich on Wall Street. I'm going to make X amount of dollars. Oh, my God. Pull out the calculator. If my money keeps growing like this, I can buy a Porsche, a Ferrari, enter anything you want, a new house, dot, dot, dot. Once you start pulling out the calculator, it's always tell people it's a bad sign. Not to say that it's not going to keep going higher, just that I've been in the business way too long, and I've worked with many, many people. And for whatever reason, human nature is somewhat repetitive. Not repetitive to the point where you can predict it 100% accurately, but it's pretty, there's a lot of commonalities or a lot of, I guess, repeatable behaviors that people exhibit. So for example, you might think, oh no, that doesn't apply to me, I'm different. Well, okay, if you're a human and you're listening to this, then let me ask you a couple questions. Number one, if you walk into a crowded theater, yell fire, what's going to happen? People are going to run. Well, okay, if you're long a stock and the market goes up or the stock goes up and it goes up big time, really far, really fast, and you're making a lot of money, are you happy or are you sad? Positive or negative? In most cases, it's a situation where you're positive. Now, the opposite happens. You enter, and all of a sudden, the stock falls and falls hard. What happens? Are you happy or are you sad? you're sad and or angry or upset or. Well, it's not just you. It's also every single other person out there. Because human nature doesn't change. And before I even talk about today's action, and before I even dive into the details and the headlines and, which I will do later in the show, I just want to start the show by talking about the important big picture, and actually the most important element or factor that you can control in your trading. Not only is it managing risk, but it's how you think and how you react to situations. Just earlier today, I was on the phone with a mentoring, consulting, advisory client, whatever word you want to use to talk. I coach people one-on-one. And the big realization, which I want to share with everybody, is that a few things. Number one, you're not different. We're all the same when it comes to feeling good when the stock goes up and feeling bad when the stock goes down. Number two, it's really important to be humble when you look at markets, because it's very easy to get arrogant. And it's very easy to think that you're better or you're smarter or. When you take the opposite view, that's the crowd thinking, by the way. And the crowd's usually what? Right or wrong? It's usually wrong. Well, why? Because it's crowd behavior, right? So I always try to stand out and separate myself intellectually from most people in the crowd and do things differently. Because if I do the same things and expect different results, you know, Einstein told us that's a definition of insanity. So when you think differently about the market, you think differently about your actions, you think differently about what the economic or political or enter any headline you want, any data point you want means for the market and the future of the market, then all of a sudden things change. Your perspective changes. You now control. You can control the most important variable to the entire equation, which is how you think and more importantly what you do. You can control your actions. And the reason why I'm taking the time to talk about this is because this is one of the subjects that most people, they overlook. They don't want to think about it. Just, what stock should I buy? You know, give the kid the candy type of a scenario. But no, Gary's listeners are smarter than the average cookie. I know that firsthand. So I can talk to you about this stuff. I can take the time to dive in a little bit deeper than most people dive. Like any, show you the headlines. Sure, I'll get to the headlines. I'll get to the leading stocks. I'll get to sectors. I'll break all that down for you. But before I do, I want to shed some light on a very important topic. It's the mental capital. You know, capital comes in two forms. There's physical capital and there's mental capital. And the physical capital, we're all familiar with that. That's the money in the bank or how much money you have in the account. And the mental capital, which is the more important one, is what we have in our head. So the important thing here is when you preserve the mental capital, the physical capital takes care of itself. When you focus on the mental capital and improving the mental capital, how you think, what you do, and then dive in deep. What drives my emotions? What drives my decisions? Well, is it better to make logical decisions, you know, rational decisions, or emotional decisions when buying stocks? If I could hear the answer, I'd probably say, the answer is to make logical ones. Well, the answer, real simple, is that most of us, well, not even the answer, but the point that I'm making here is that most of us are making emotional decisions, and we're not even aware of it. And what that means for all of us is if you step back and you think about human behavior, how we all behave when it comes to us buying things, people make decisions based on emotions, and they justify it with logic. Don't take my word for it. You can Google it, or you can even just think about your own behavior or anyone you know's behavior. When they buy anything, you go buy an Armani t-shirt for $150. Where's the logic there? Is it that much better cotton? Is it that much better of a material? Or is it the brand? How do you feel when you drive a Ferrari or a Porsche or a Lamborghini or a Maserati? How do you feel when you wear that designer suit? How do you feel when you buy that stock? And if you notice, ladies and gentlemen, that feeling is what drives most of our decisions, and we're not even aware of it. And that's part of the mental capital and the mental part of the game that I like to spend so much time focusing on, because the crowd doesn't. The crowd gets caught up in the noise. I like to pause, slow down a little bit, even though I talk fast, but slow down a little bit and say, okay, it's time to just take a minute and reflect on what really drives our thinking and our behavior. Up next, we're going to talk about the stocks, the major indices, some sectors, a little bit more on the psychology part, and a whole lot more. I want to thank you very much for being here. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
It's time to switch on the integrator units and get the brain cells working.
You're listening to...
Hey, this promises to be fun.
Investor's Edge.
The last bastion of quality programming.
With Gary Kaltbaum.
It doesn't get better than this.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum. In case you're just joining us, we spent the first part of the show in a little different direction. We spoke about mental capital versus physical capital and the importance of taking inventory and understanding how we think and how we behave. Because a lot of people focus on the headlines, focus on the stocks, focus on the news, and we'll get to that later in the show, but I just want to finish the understanding or the brief explanation here, and it's very, very brief. If you want more, by all means, feel free to contact me, or just go to adamsarhan.com and send a message, or anywhere you want. So, or you go to chartyourtrade.com and send us a message there as well. Excuse me. So to finish the thought, most of us think we're making rational decisions. But when you step back and you look at it and you really dive deep, it's amazing when you understand you're actually making emotional decisions. I had this journey, by the way. When I started early on, I said, oh, yeah, I'm rational. Oh, yeah, I can beat the market. Oh, yeah, it's not going to happen to me. Every cognitive bias you possibly can think of, and then some. Every mistake you can think of, and then some, in the market I've made, and I've learned from it. So the good news is I'm here to share everything I've learned with you guys, because I wish somebody was there for me when I got started. Gary was, of course, a huge help, and forever I'm thankful, and some other people as well. But I'm always happy to share and help others, because I know how it feels, and I want to learn, and it feels good to help. So to continue the thought here is, when you really peel back the onion, you ask yourself, am I making rational decisions or am I making emotional ones? Most of the time, you're making decisions based on your emotions and you're justifying it with logic. So if you look at a stock, for example, XYZ, another stock, ABC, or LMNOP, there's three stocks here, one might jump out at you. And I don't know how else to explain it besides it's just attracted for some reason, whether you like the stock, you like the brand, you like the chart, the pattern, whatever it is, for some reason might jump out at you, but it might not jump out at me or the next person. And that's what makes the market. There's a certain quality to life that you can't explain. For example, what does the color of blue look like? What does chocolate taste like? It sounds crazy. I'll give anybody $1 million cash right now if you can tell me definitively what the color blue looks like, or red, or green, or orange. And or what chocolate tastes like, what does it feel like to be in love, what does it feel like to get, you know, enter any other quality of life you want. Can't do it. It's physically impossible. It's so crazy. It's almost mind-blowing. Can't even explain what color blue looks like. Now, or chocolate. When you taste chocolate, I can't give you vanilla or strawberry and say, oh, this is chocolate. No way. Once you see blue, I can't be like, oh, this, look at this green dollar bill. It's blue. No way. Humans, all of us, we have to see there's a certain quality. You have to experience it, taste it, feel it, any of your senses, right? What does a rose smell like? Explain that to me. Can't do it. And the beauty of life is that you get to go through life and experience all these different things, and everyone has a different quality. Everything has a different quality to it. And once you experience that quality, then you know what it is. Definitively, no question. Same thing with stocks. What attracts you to XYZ might not be the same thing. In fact, it's not the same thing that attracts me to XYZ or LMNOP or ABC or whatever it is. So it's really important for you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that if that's the case and we're really making most of us emotional decisions based on what we feel, then we have to ask ourselves, okay, do I want to continue to do this or change? It's just that simple. And if you continue to do it, that's fine. You can still do very well making emotional decisions. But when you step back and work on removing your emotions from the equation, actually making rational decisions, then all of a sudden everything changes. And then you see things differently. And then when you see things differently, you act differently. And you make different decisions. You take different actions. And then all of a sudden, you have a new level of awareness. And when you remove yourself from the equation and you give advice, it's much easier to point the finger at anybody and be like, oh yeah, all you have to do is just go in the gym and lose a little bit of weight or save a little bit of money, stop spending here, or whatever. Point out any flaw in any other human is so much easier than pointing it out in yourself. Why? It's called a personal blind spot bias. We all have it. If you have a mind, you have biases. Google cognitive biases when you're done and just read up on some of them. It's a really dry subject, but it's really fascinating if you like to dive in deep. And in this business, if you're a discretionary trader, which means you use your discretion to buy and sell stocks and make decisions all day, every day, then you need to ask yourself, okay, what factors impact my decisions? And that's what I did, and that's how I began to learn all this. And it goes so much deeper, but I won't go too much deeper because there's only a certain amount of time that's allowed in the radio show. But I wanted to just briefly touch on some of these subjects for you, because if there's one nugget of wisdom or one thing that jumped out at you that you learned that you enjoy off of this segment or this topic, by all means, you can explore it at much greater detail, or you can contact me and I'm happy to help accelerate the process. But it's just important to ask yourself, okay, if human behavior is somewhat predictable, not 100% predictable, obviously, but it's somewhat predictable. Stock goes up, people are happy. Stock goes down, people are not happy. You can start asking yourself questions. Okay, well, how do I anticipate what other people are going to behave or other people feel? More importantly, what are they going to do when the stock drops, pulls back, or when the stock rallies? How do I avoid making those mistakes? How do I capitalize on other people's mistakes? You know, Carl Icahn, a billionaire investor, has a great, great Twitter profile. And he says, some people make money doing this. I make my money by studying other people's stupidity. I love that line. And it's not so much, you don't have to be so strong with the language, but it's real simple. And Forrest Gump has another great line about stupid, you know, I don't even want to go there. Don't even want to use the S word. But you get the point. We all do things that we think are quote unquote smart, but when you step back and look at it, if somebody else did it, is it actually smart? Whatever your purchase is, and if somebody else was making that purchase, you can see things clearly because the emotional bias, the blind spot is gone when it's someone else. In other words, if you sit with me and I do something, doesn't matter what it is, you can tell me, oh, yeah, that's probably not a good idea, or that's probably a good idea. Do more of it, do less of it. But when you're doing it and you're only sitting there by yourself, it's very difficult to get out of your head. And there's a great line out there, if you stay in your head, you're dead. So just to wrap up the whole mental capital part of the equation, it's really important, ladies and gentlemen, to take a hard look in the mirror, dive in deep, ask yourselves, how do I get better? Is this smart? What am I doing differently than the crowd? And by the way, I can go on and on and on and on. But that's just touching the surface so you don't get lost in the weeds and you can separate yourself from the pack. Remember yesterday, Ray Dalio, biggest hedge fund guy in the world, has a great book called Principles. Great line out there. Think differently, the independent thinking. Up next, we'll talk about the market, stocks, sectors, and a whole lot more. I'm Adam Sarhan, and this is the one and only Investor's Edge.
America is talking.
Investor's Edge.
He's got to be pleased with that. The crowd is just on its feet here. He's you said you're on a boy.
With Gary Kaltbaum.
Comes highly recommended. You're going to feel better if you talk to him.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum. In case you're just joining us, we spent the first part of the show talking about mental capital versus physical capital. I dove in a little bit deep and spent some time focusing on how we all make decisions. Why? Because it's really important for us to understand how we're making decisions, what our subconscious is saying and doing, because our subconscious controls a lot of our decisions, and also to separate ourselves from the pack so we don't just blindly follow the pack, meaning the stock goes up, we're happy, stock goes down, we're sad, we sell, and then it goes back up without us. How many times have you sold a stock and then boom, it turns around almost instantly after you sell it and goes higher? Happens to everybody. Happened to me a million times. Still happens to me every once in a while. The key is to just be able to just change, identify the patterns, change the patterns, and then go as deep as you want, and you can go on and on and on and on and on. So now let's talk about markets. Market wrap for the day. It was a up day on Wall Street for most of the day today. You basically had a few big things. Walmart came out with earnings before the open. Surprisingly, the retail stocks, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the retail apocalypse, which has been basically the death of retail for a long time. Retail stocks have been languishing as Amazon has just showed up and eaten everyone's lunch. Walmart gapped up at the open, but traded off and sold off throughout most of the day. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing, doesn't mean it's a good thing, just means that there's still a lot of overhead resistance and the stock's just not ready to go just yet. We know Walmart earlier this week came out with next day service and deliveries. They're trying to combat Amazon with their whole online deliveries thing and attract more buyers. It's a very, very tough environment. But since retail has a lot of retail stocks are reporting earnings in the next several days and just the last week and the next week going forward, I want to spend a few minutes talking about retail stocks and retail on Main Street. So when you look at the market and you look at these retailers, you can look at the XRT, by the way, which is an ETF that tracks retailers. It's been under pressure for quite some time. You know, it hasn't been a month or 2 months. Really, it's been falling since, for almost, what is it now? I'd say since September of last year. Just been steadily declining. Now, meanwhile, the stock market hit new highs just a week and a half ago, or a week and change ago. So clearly the relative strength on a relative basis, retail stocks have been woefully underperforming. Now, there are some retailers which are outperforming and acting very well, but for the vast majority of them are not. Now, if you want to just see the ultimate poster child here, take a look at Shopify, S-H-O-P. Now, granted, this is not a retailer in a traditional sense. It's an online platform that offers retailers the ability to have online stores, small and large. Stock's going straight up. It's a monster. Back in January, the stock was trading at $130. It's now at $278. Look at the XRT. Look at Walmart. Even Amazon hasn't gone up as much as Shopify, but Amazon's acted very well since then. Amazon has had a big move since January, the December lows. It went from 1307, all the way up to about 2000, about 1960-ish. It had a big move, and then it pulled back into the 50, and now it's bouncing off the 50. So for the week, before I go into the week, let me just talk about retailers. So obviously there's a big difference. Now look at a Macy's, for example, ticker symbol M, almost a new 52-week low, if not a 52-week low. Yeah, it's a new 52-week low. Kohl's, KSS, these traditional brick and mortars just hasn't gone anywhere in a long time. American Eagle Outfitters, AEO, hasn't gone anywhere in a long time. Retailers have to reinvent themselves. Otherwise, they're not going to succeed. They have to invest in their infrastructure. They've got to give consumers a reason to come into the store. It's not like the old days where people didn't have options. Now people have options. They don't have to shop in the mall or shop on, you know, in traditional stores, brick and mortar. Look at what happened to Sears. Look what happened to Payless Shoes. You know, the list goes on and on of all these big retailers that were once huge names in the industry imploded because they did not evolve and they did not compete effectively online. And then you have a whole new younger age of retailers that are online and are doing very, very well. So the retailers, the brick-and-mortar retailers, now have to survive. And the way they're surviving is by doing a few things. They're turning the stores into a destination. They have salons in there sometimes, some of these stores. They have experiences. The big box stores like IKEA and Costco have food, dining. Imagine you go shopping in a store. I mean, I'm sure you guys have been to Costco or IKEA, and or many of you at least, and you've seen it. It's no longer just, hey, go there, buy your stuff, and leave. There's an experience when you go there. And the smaller retailers as well. They have custom one-on-one, you know, Bloomingdale's and Nordstrom, some of these other stores, have other services that didn't exist 20 or 30, 40 years ago. And some of those services are personal shoppers. And even if they're turning into a destination, it doesn't mean that they're good. The stock's going up. I mean, Nordstrom, JWN is a symbol there. The stock's been going straight down, just like Macy's and just like several other big retailers. And meanwhile, Amazon, the online shopping, Shopify, or these other online stores, even HubSpot, HUBS, which is basically an online marketing platform, a little bit different, but it helps these retailers and other companies market and sell things online, are thriving, or at least doing well. So if these big box retailers don't reinvent themselves, they're really in for a very, very tough environment. Now, in addition to becoming a destination, in addition to having services, they're also investing heavily in infrastructure because they want to be able to compete online. And in order to do that, you have to have a robust supply chain. You have to have the ability to compete online by offering quick, fast turnaround in an environment which is difficult. It's not inexpensive. It's expensive to send next day shipping or to ship something instantly. Amazon, because Amazon's the behemoth that Amazon is, and the reason why they are that way, by the way, is because they anticipated customer behavior. Customers want things, they want to shop online. They want things cheaper and faster. They'll get it the next day. So Amazon was way ahead of the curve, thanks to Bezos' vision. He understood that it's more or less retail is now a commodity. We can just commoditize it, give consumers cheaper products, lower margins, don't invest in the big box stores, and boom, sell online and have plants, fulfillment centers all throughout the country and give them same day service or next day service or 3 day shipping. Now he's hiring a whole fleet of same day drivers, couriers, that are using the fulfillment, Amazon deliveries, and whole logistics, Google Amazon logistics, I think it's logistics.amazon.com or something like that, where they actually have programs where they'll pay employees that are unhappy that want to leave $10,000 to leave and set up a logistics company to go deliver the boxes all day long. Or anyone else, not just employees, but if you wanted to drive a truck or drive 40 trucks around your town and pick up and drop off all day long for Amazon and hire 30, 40, 50, 100 employees to do that for you, you can make decent money just doing that. That's Amazon. So think about these other retailers. It's very expensive to go out there and pick up and drop off and deliver, and then the returns, and then the this and that. So these stores have to reinvent themselves. Walmart has the footprint, the retail stores. They just have to figure out how to capture that online experience and grow and compete effectively with Amazon. And these other retailers have to figure that out as well. To keep it real simple, there's online retail, online shopping, and there's offline. Online is booming because that's what consumers are doing. That's where consumer behavior has shifted to. And the offline or the brick and mortar retailers are suffering because it's not as convenient to go to the mall and buy six or seven things like we used to do 10, 20, 30 years ago. So keep that in mind as you invest going forward. You have to ask yourself, even within the retail sector, what retailers are they doing? What retailers are you looking at? What are they doing to compete? Are they online? Are they offline? Are they moving more online? All these questions that we just addressed. Because otherwise, it's a very, very tough environment. And you can look at Target also. TGT is a symbol there. gapped down just recently, twice in the last 6 months or 7 months. So just keep in mind, as you look at these retail stocks, and we spend a lot of time with these retailers, just always ask yourself, what's their edge? Can they compete online? Up next, we'll talk a lot more about the major indices, some individual stocks, some more sectors, and some breaking them down even further. I'm Adam Sarhan. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
You're listening to...
What are you waiting for?
One, two, ready,
now!
Go.
Action!
Investor's Edge with Gary Kaltbaum.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum. In case you're just joining us or you missed any part of the show, by all means, please feel free to go back to GaryK.com. Every night the show is posted, if not that night, the next day. And you're free to listen, pause, rewind, fast forward to any part of the show and catch up. As a quick refresher, we spent the first part of the show going over mental capital versus versus physical capital. And the mental capital basically is psychological analysis and analyzing what motives and factors drive your decisions and the importance of separating the emotions in the decision-making process. And then we spoke about the major indices. Today was an update on Wall Street. We spoke about retailers, and we spoke about how Walmart kicked off earnings season. Well, not earnings season, excuse me, earnings for today. And we dove in deep with the other retail stocks. Cisco was another company that had a nice big move today and that dominated the headlines on numbers, and they raised guidance. That stock is acting very well, back above the 50, and it's up about 7%. Big move for Cisco. A few headlines for the day, just to cover some headlines. Trump had come out in the Trump administration and basically said that Huawei, which is one of China's largest tech companies, can't really do business with many U.S. companies, and there's somewhat of a disconnect between what's going on for many reasons. But from China's point of view, that's considered not necessarily a positive data point in the negotiations, and I'll let everything unfold how it unfolds, but that's just, it was a big thing. It's like almost like saying China bans Apple from doing business in China, something to that effect, or Google or Microsoft or whatever the case may be. So that was a big headline. Other headlines of the day, we have big focus on earnings. You've got retail stocks that are in focus now. You know, earnings season ebbs and flows. It begins with the big banks, more or less. There's obviously other companies are sprinkled in, hundreds of companies report. So this is just big picture painting. And then after the big banks, you get a lot of the big tech companies, and then it kind of shifts to retail and a few other sectors. And the industrials obviously come out in the middle of that. A lot of the Dow stocks come out. But, you know, you more or less have an ebb and flow. The bulk of earnings are out. We now are in the latter half of earnings season. It's slowing down, and that's normal. The question for investors going forward with respect to earnings is, what's going to happen this quarter? You know, how are earnings going to come out for the second quarter of 19, and also for GDP? And what's going to happen to the economic growth? Will these tariffs, will all of the back and forth, these headlines of volatility in the stock market, will it impact the bottom line of these companies? Will it slow down growth? Will businesses not want to invest? Will they be timid? Will they be fearful? Who knows? We'll find out. But when you look at the data, you look at any of the data points that come out, I just strongly recommend, ladies and gentlemen, always ask yourself, what does this all mean going forward? That's what the market looks at. Whereas data, by definition, is just a rearview mirror phenomenon. The other big headline that came out today, which kind of is buried in the middle of everything, but the Fed's Neil Kashkari, who's one of the Fed governors, he, I believe in Minnesota, he came out, he was instrumental back in 08, financial crisis too. He worked with Paulson Bank in the bailout. He came out and said rate hikes were not called for, quote unquote, and that policy has been, quote unquote, too tight. Well, what does that mean when you translate it into English? It basically means more easy money. Yesterday, I also spoke about the fact that the Fed has a lot to do with these negotiations. If negotiations go sour for whatever reason, there's the Fed put, right? The Fed will step in and cut rates. Well, here we have a central banker coming out, who's, by the way, well-versed in what happens with easy money, who was a player 10 years ago in that whole, so had a front row seat. If anybody did, he definitely did, in what easy money does and how easy money works. And he's coming out now saying, yeah, Fed's policy is a little bit too tight. He didn't say a little bit. That's my word. So let's just be fair. He said it's too tight, which basically tells you when you read between the lines, and I always call it adult talk versus children talk. If anyone has young kids, young kids are very, very literal, very direct to the point, right? It's like, okay, if you say this, I don't feel like doing something. Yes, no, white, black, you know, on, off, that type of thing. But adults, we talk a little bit differently. So there's adult talk. So 7-year-old daughter, she asked me, she goes, well, Dad, you know, X, Y, Z, what does this mean? And you have to kind of explain to her what it means, because it's not clear. So when the Fed comes out and says it's too tight, and it's basically the Fed saying, okay, more him, not the Fed, him speaking on behalf of his own opinion within the Fed, that he agrees that Fed should cut. Think about that as a stimulating factor to the economy. Stocks are up 200 points throughout the day today, up, what was it, about 1%, a little under 1% today. What does that mean when the Fed comes out and says, oh, you know what, we're going to maybe a little more easy money, rates not too tight, you know, almost like an SNL character. And that echoes my comments from yesterday where there's more than meets the eye. And it's important to put these pieces of the puzzle together. But stepping back, you know, the 50-day moving average had been support for a long time for the major indices. We spoke about that. Gary talks about that at length. The NASDAQ 100, the QQQ, is back above that level. The S&P 500 is above that level. It's a weak close today, not ideal, but it is what it is. And then you have the Dow, which is still below that level, and the Russell, the IWM, if you want to look at the ETFs, is right there. So if you can see by the end of this week the market close higher, substantially higher, that would be a very strong sign in the short term, because you had the 700-point shellacking on Monday, and then you recovered for the rest of the week. And remember, the market really, a big focus is by the end of the week. So tomorrow, I'll be back on the show. I'll give you a full week in review, a play-by-play on what actually happened for the week. And I'll be able to break it down for you and give you a lot more about, okay, what does all this mean in context? Was it, you know, a nice little normal pullback? Something more severe? Nope, there's the bell. It's always a pleasure. I want to thank you very, very much for being here. This is Adam Sarhan. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Investor's Edge on the Biz Talk Radio Network. If you missed any of today's show or to get in touch with Gary Kaltbaum, please go to GaryK.com. That's GaryK.com. To reach Gary Kaltbaum at his office, call 1-888-422-5559. That's 1-888-422-5559.